Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 27th of May, Anno Domini 2017, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues, here comes the news. The majority of machines hit by the WannaCry ransomware worm in the cyber attack earlier this month were running Windows 7, apparently. More than 97% of the infections seen by Kaspersky Lab and 66% of those seen by BitSight were running the old, obsolete Windows 7. WannaCry started spreading in mid-May and so far has infected more than 200,000 computers around the world. In the UK, some hospitals had to turn away patients as the worm shut down computer systems. Many suggested that the reason UK hospitals suffered was because many of them still relied on programs that required Windows XP, a version of Microsoft's OS that debuted in 2001. But infections of XP by WannaCry were really insignificant, according to Kaspersky Labs. Windows 7, which was first released in 2009, that's right, 8 years ago, and the most widely infected version was the 64-bit edition, which is widely used by large organizations. Many organizations seem to have been caught out because they failed to apply a patch, which was issued by Microsoft in March, that blocked the vulnerability which WannaCry exploited. After encrypting the files, the WannaCry worm demanded a payment of $300 in bitcoins before they were unfrozen. So far, a report of 296 payments totaling $99,448 have been made to the Bitcoin wallets tied to the ransomware. There have been no reports that anyone who paid actually had their data restored. Security experts also found that the worm spread largely by seeking out vulnerable machines on the net itself. Before now, many thought it had got started via an email-based phishing campaign. Malwarebytes said the worm was primed to look for machines vulnerable to a bug in a Microsoft technology known as the Server Message Block, or SMB. The attackers initiated an operation to hunt down vulnerable public-facing SMB ports, and once located, used the newly available SMB exploits to deploy malware and propagate to other vulnerable machines within connected networks. They suspect that whoever was behind the worm first identified a few thousand vulnerable machines, which were used as the launch platform for the much larger waves of infections. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, whoever Francis actually is Win 7 hit hardest by WannaCry? And your choices are, I'm already on Win 10, I've upgraded now, I'll upgrade, I promise, going commando, baby, and what is this Windows you speak of? So far, 46% of you have voted for what is this Windows you speak of, followed by I'm already on Windows 10, followed by going commando. And the upgraders are, nobody's upgraded or will be upgrading. But I know you'll have more to say about this, whether you're right or not. I mean, you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff, you'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion, and at least at the moment, the first item under the poll discussion is 27 May 17, Win 7 hit hardest by WannaCry. Six posts so far, and you can join in the fun there. And of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
I still want to cry.
You want to cry. Yep. It was a pretty virulent attack. It's not done yet. The worst problem is now. The nice part was that it was controlled by looking for a domain on the internet that was unregistered. It was just a string of numbers and letters, unregistered domain.
So a stupid bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
He should have registered himself.
No. The point was it would be unregistered.
Yeah.
You know, he saved $8 a year or whatever he saved, right? It would be unregistered, and as long as it was unregistered, then the thing would go along.
Mm.
Well, a researcher discovered that in the code. He registered the domain thinking, I'll capture whatever packets it's sending. Well, all it was doing was checking to see if the domain was unregistered. And once he registered, he basically stopped the attack.
Yeah.
Because now it wouldn't spread anymore because of that. Because it found the domain was registered. That was the guy's kill switch.
But other variants worked differently, and it still spread.
Right. And now there are other variants that are out, and they don't have the kill switch, so it's still spreading pretty much. So if you have Windows 7, and if you there are a lot of you out there who are very proud of having blocked all updates so you didn't go to Windows 10. Well, one of the updates you blocked was the fix for WannaCry. So you're pretty vulnerable right now unless you install the fix.
And we've talked for years about Exploit Thursday. So Microsoft has their Patch Tuesday, which is when they normally release the patches and bug fixes, which lets the bad guys find out about them if they didn't already know.
And then give them.
And by Thursday, they have written programs to take advantage of these patches because they know people won't update.
Right.
So this exploit that hit in May was patched in March.
March.
And so 2 months later, so it wasn't patched Thursday, it was patched 2 months later. So 2 months later, they wrote the exploit. And still got hundreds of thousands of people that hadn't updated their Windows.
It's no different than folks backing up their machines.
Yeah, I
we
meant to get to
tell folks weekly to back up, and the hundreds of folks that are out there that don't do it.
Right. Every week. I meant to back up.
Yep.
Okay. You know what's paved with good intentions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're on it now. Sorry.
Oh, according to Wikipedia, it's Exploit Wednesday. It only takes one day.
Yeah, well, it takes one day
guys.
Now.
I was
giving
them 2 days.
I was being generous. You've been generous. Those are the old days. These are the new days.
Now, with the faster internet, they got to do it faster.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So, it's a real issue. I get not wanting to go to Windows 10 for, I really don't know what reason, but okay, you have a reason.
It's different.
It's different, and God forbid I do something different. And that's fine. But that leaves you vulnerable to this stuff. You don't get the updates that everybody else gets. What updates you do get, you're blocking, so you don't get to Windows 10.
Let me update. I'll say that. So Steve Gibson at GRC had a program he wrote called Never 10 that specifically blocks the Windows 10 update, so you can leave all your other updates running. It's still getting 2,000 downloads a day.
Yep.
Even though the automatic Windows 10 update has stopped.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But, okay, sure.
Right. And it's a very... Windows 7 is very familiar to people, and I get that. And people don't like change, and I get that, and blah, blah, blah.
But that version of Classic Shell...
Well, then, they have to know about that, too.
Yeah, I put Classic Shell on my Windows 10 machine, and it looks just like Windows 10, 7. You know, as far as the look and feel,
right?
And it's there, and I see all the menus, and everything's like it was, but I'm running Windows 10.
We hear from people all the time that say they don't know anything about computers. Oh, you know, I'm stupid about computers. Well, don't put yourself down like that. You can learn a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You learned what you're doing now, so you could learn a little bit more.
Exactly.
You could switch to the new thing with better security to stop you from running into these problems later, and you can learn the new way to do it.
Well, and it's
in fact, I haven't. But most of Windows 10 looks pretty much the same as Windows 7, except the start menu is radically different.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't even bothered learning it because Cortana, I just type what I want into in the little search window and it finds it for me.
Right. It's actually much easier.
Yeah. Where did they hide the control panels? I don't care. I just type CONT. Oh, there it is.
Yep. Yep. And people, I've been saying this now for decades. Buying a new computer is like buying a new car. You still know how to drive, you just don't know where the radio is. Nobody doesn't buy a new car because the radio's not where it was in the old car.
Or how do you program the stations?
Right, how do you program the stations? You learn all that. You deal with all that. How do you change the clock for daylight saving? You learn all of that.
Some people don't, though.
Some people don't.
Yeah. Black tape over it.
Yeah, right. But you learn all of that, and it only takes a day or two, and then you never have to do it again. And I believe most of the people who are not moving to Windows 10 do so simply because they don't want to have to learn a new interface. Two things, you don't have to learn a new interface if you use Classic Shell. Two, the new interface is very, 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 very much like the old interface. Three, the new interface is easier. And four, I don't think you're as stupid as you think you are.
Well, the other thing that folks don't realize, once you with the Windows 10, if you go to the desktop mode, by clicking on the desktop. If you right-click on that, you can get to the functions where you can put on there your various applications that you had before with Windows 7 and all those. The other ones, you could put the control panel on there. You can put the computer. And you can put all those other icons that came standard. Like I said, the control panel, the networking, my computer, my folders for documents, and put those all there.
Yeah, this is not Windows 8 that forced you into touchscreen tablet mode.
Right. This you can go, if you go into the Windows 10 and click on the desktop and then you right click, you can get in there and put down your desktop look, and it says desktop icons over on the left hand side, and you can click there and you can put ever which ones you want back on your desktop for the easier use. If you don't want to do that typing, like you said, to do the control panel or anything else, it's right there.
Yep.
You just got, like you said, take the time to do it.
Right. And by the way, Microsoft did have an optional update that removes the Get Windows 10 stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not accepting updates, you didn't get that either. So now you're still blocking an update that Microsoft lets you block anyway. It's ridiculous. It's gotten ridiculous.
Well, now you can't get Windows 10 for free, so you'd have to pay for it.
Which is why they put out that utility.
Right, which is one way to not get it. When anything asks for your credit card, don't give it to them.
Right.
What is it? Windows Home is like $100. Premium is $150. Pro is $200.
Most folks need
Home. Yeah.
Yeah, just the Home.
Huh. Yeah, but we're really at the point where people who are not doing the upgrade. It's you know, I get it. Now you have to pay for it. People don't have $100. I get that. But you didn't upgrade for free because you're just stubborn.
And so Windows 10 was free for a year.
Right.
It's been a year since it stopped being free. July 2016 is when it stopped. Mm-hmm. It's been a year already since it wasn't free.
Right. It's been out for 2 years. Half of that was free.
Yeah.
It's not a bad operating system. If your system will handle it, it's faster, it's cleaner, there are fewer bugs. It just is, in general, a better operating system. And now we're talking about Windows 7, so there are those of you who believe that's damning with faint praise. But the reality is that it is a better operating system than 7. And those of you who missed out on a free upgrade, well, you missed out.
Yep. Other than the only thing better than that is a Chromebook.
Well, and then you're right. And then on the other side, there's things like Chromebooks and where you never have to once. You know, but again, it's a different interface.
Yeah, but
and not but it's pretty close to the web browser you're currently using.
Well, yeah, it is the web browser.
It is a web browser. Yeah.
And I get that, but I don't know. It just people don't like change. They get angry about change.
Yeah, you're right.
Mostly that's, you know, who was it who said a foolish consistency is the bugbear of, what is it? Foolish inconsistency is the hobgoblin of small minds.
Okay.
I forget who said that, but.
Little minds.
Little minds. The hobgoblin of little minds.
And Google says. Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Yeah, it was Emerson. Of course it was Emerson.
Google says. right.
But if you are getting a new machine, you're going to get 10 anyway, and I honestly think you should. It is more secure, which is becoming more and more important in this world. It is easier to use once you actually learn it.
And it's more secure because it still has security patches. With Windows 7, Windows 8, there are no more security patches, so you're screwed. In fact, this last WannaCry was very unusual that Microsoft released patches for the older OS.
Believe me, we'll talk about that after the break. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of moments with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And when we left, we were talking about updates and what's not updated, et cetera, et cetera. And this last weekend, I had an article in the paper about Windows 7 being out of warranty and they're not getting updates anymore. And I can't tell you the number of people who wrote to me and said I'm an idiot and speculated about my parentage and told me that they're still getting updates. No, you're not. Microsoft stopped updating Windows 7 on January 13th, 2015, unless you are paying for extended support. You are not getting updates except for a few security updates. I get updates
so
all... What?
They are.
They are getting updates. And they're saying, I get updates all the time. No. Your antivirus may be updating because that's outside of Microsoft Update. Your anti-malware may be updating. That's outside of Microsoft Update. Your Chrome may be updating. Your Firefox may be updating. But Windows itself is not updating. I promise you this. It is not updating. It even if you have Service Pack 1, end of mainstream support was January 13th, 2015. If you are using Windows 7 RTM without service packs, it ended 2 years earlier. So trust me, you do not have support for Windows 7. Windows 8 is still being supported for another 6 months. Windows 10 till October 13th of 2020, but Windows 7 was January 13th of 2015. Vista, April 10th of 2012. So I know you think you're still getting updates, and you are in the sense that your antivirus is updating and a couple of other things may be updating, but that's not Windows updates. You are not getting Windows updates. Trust me when I tell you this, unless you are paying for them or your company is paying for them. So stop telling me you are because you're not.
And that's what made the patch for XP and Vista and 8 for WannaCry so unusual. I just read a quote from a Microsoft official that said that it was painful to watch all the people getting infected by this. So, yeah, they went ahead and released an update for the older OSs. And we normally charge for this, but it was painful. So, you know, we'll get it to you anyway.
Yeah.
So, no, you're not. Windows 7 is not updating for you. You're not special. Unless you're paying for it. Microsoft thinks anybody who pays for updates is special. So banks are still getting updates. Mm-hmm. ATM machines are still getting updates. The military is still getting updates.
That was one of the tricks I read about. Windows Embedded?
Yeah.
That ATMs, it's such a scary thing when you see your ATM have a blue screen of death with an XP logo on it. but Windows Embedded... is still getting updates because it's ATMs and POS, point of sale stuff. So there was a registry hack you could do on your computer to make it think it was Windows Embedded, and then it would get updates for a while longer.
Right.
And Microsoft apparently figured that out and fixed it.
Fixed that, not. Yeah.
We'll show you. you're not going to buy our new OS, we're not going to give you any updates.
Yeah, Microsoft is not in the business of maintaining 10-year-old operating systems.
No, there's no money in it.
They don't care anymore.
Yeah, no.
And believe me when I tell you, you're not getting updated.
You don't buy a new one every year? That's your fault.
That's right. That's right. That's why people go to Linux, where you don't pay for the operating system at all. That's why they go to the Mac, where the last couple operating systems, at least, have been inexpensive or free. People go to Chromebooks because the operating system itself updates all by itself without you having to do a thing, and that's how that works. So,
and now most companies, Microsoft included, they are making their earnings off of other things. They're not making their money off the OS anymore. They're making their money off of services. Azure is where they're making it. I heard somebody pronounce it Azure.
Azure?
I've always pronounced it Azure.
It's Azure.
Azure.
Well, they're French.
They were French. Azure.
Yeah,
Azure.
Yeah.
I guess that's better than blue. There was that episode of Sliders where they slide into parallel worlds that are slightly different, and they didn't realize what was wrong with this world until someone pointed out the Azure Gate Bridge in San Francisco.
There you go. And
why was it blue and not golden? Yeah.
And I am amused, by the way, that Microsoft called that service by a shade of blue, which is reminiscent of the blue screen of death. But yep. That's another story entirely.
But it wasn't red. So green is good. Red is bad. I guess blue's in the middle.
I guess so. To the phones. Our first caller is George from Webster, New York. Hi, George. What's up?
Good afternoon. I just wanted to comment a little bit about the update issue.
Of course you did.
I think a lot of people with Windows 7 have a viewpoint like this. You know, it's like in the wintertime when you see ice on the lake. A lot of people are just going to walk out on that ice till they fall through. And I think a lot of people are looking at Windows 7 that way. I'm going to keep going with it until I fall in the drink.
Because nothing bad's going to happen to me.
Right, right. And a lot of people adopt that philosophy even with a car they drive. I'm not going to replace it until I have to.
It's still out of tire.
And another thing I would say, I think the tone of your program has changed over time. I listen to you on a continuous basis. I think there was a time where you were really ragging on Microsoft big time.
Yep.
And now your tone seems to have changed. As a matter of fact, you know, if you could convince everybody to buy a Chromebook and a Chromebox, your show would end.
Yeah, it would.
You wouldn't have a show anymore.
Let me tell you my attitude toward Microsoft. It has always been they were the number one computer company in the world. They had more money than Croesus, and they should have done better.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I hated Microsoft for.
You can talk about all sorts of businesses that could be doing better.
Well, right, but I picked on Microsoft because that's my...
That's your bailiwick.
Right. Yeah. But now they're doing better. I have less to complain about. They are indeed. Are they doing great? Not so much, but they're doing much, much better.
Well, you know, Windows might even look better in a few more years when Windows 7 conks out for me.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, I've almost gone 2.5 years walking on that ice.
Yep. Well, and people will walk on the ice until they fall through, and
then they'll
call us complaining.
That's right.
And I don't have a problem with what operating system you run. Don't try to tell me it's doing something it isn't.
But let me comment about that. Since January of 15, I've been getting updates every month. Now, I may not be getting the updates if, like it would have been when Microsoft was fully supporting it, but I'm getting updates every month.
You're not getting Windows updates. You might be getting Office updates, antivirus updates.
I don't use Microsoft Office anyhow, so I don't give a damn about those.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
But honestly,
security updates. I get all the security updates.
If you get the security updates from Windows, I don't know where you're getting them. You will indeed get security updates from your antivirus or from any other programs that you're running outside of the Windows operating system itself.
Well, there's two versions of that. You know, I'm in the kitchen now. I don't have the computer. I can't look at it, but you know, and you're talking to somebody that's 77 years old, so you'll find your memory will dissipate over time, too. But you can go to Windows Updates, and you can look at the important ones, and then you can look at the Windows ones. And, in fact, I know because I just went there the other day, and I said, to hell with it. I ignored them.
Right, but you're not getting the critical ones, and those are the most critical.
Right.
Am I surviving for 2.5 years?
Luck.
Oh, come on.
That's
the truth.
And some of it is that the threats are changing. Viruses in general are on a downturn.
Yep.
Most of the threats now are fake emails. And phishing scams and fake ads on a website. You go to a website that's infected, and it could be a big website. You know, Forbes and CNN and BBC, they've all been infected with fake ads. And the ad says you're infected with a virus. You call the bad guy, and they steal your money. So it's and those types of things are not viruses. They're not malware. So there can't be an anti-program for that.
Well, and so I had one yesterday. I'll give you an example. The day before yesterday, I was checking a phone number that came in here. And I put the phone number in the URL, and I read about it. And then I clicked another link on that page, and up popped a window that said it was a virus.
Yep.
Okay?
And people get tricked by that
Me. And if you got a brain, you'll know what to do. In fact, you guys have told people what to do. Yeah. And I'll tell you what I did. Bingo. Right there it said virus. I touched nothing on that page. Nothing. Mm-hmm. I went to the task manager, cleared it.
Yep.
It was gone. I ran Malwarebytes. I ran, I did a virus. Well, first of all, I use Panda. Panda always catches everything for me anyhow. I ran all my applications I could. It's clean and green, and it's clean today. So I haven't had a problem like that.
Right.
I will tell you this. The one thing I will agree with you, I got an XP machine down in the basement, and I was going to follow the philosophy that Dave was talking about months ago, where he said he was going to keep his Windows 7 machine, and he was going to use that for his hobbies, but he wasn't going to go online with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I decided to get out my XP machine, and the mistake I made, in fact, it's so old, Google Chrome isn't even supported on it anymore. So I figured, well, I'll stick my toe in the water and see what happens. Well, I was nailed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I was nailed. And what was on that machine was an old copy of AVG. So I said, what the hell? I'm going to run it. I ran it. Well, it ran for a little while and showed three viruses. And I eliminated those three viruses. And then I says, well, I'm going to let it run the rest of the way. When it got all done, it said there were 1,800 viruses on the machine. Okay?
Yep.
Well, I'm pretty good at the computer, but I used a buddy of mine, and I said, Rob, why don't you take a look at this? Make a long story short, he cleaned it right up.
Yep.
And I will use that in the future as a backup machine for my photographic work or that, but I won't get on the Internet with it. So that was a big vulnerability.
Right. And there's what we call, it's sort of become the Internet background radiation. There are old viruses still wandering around that if you happen to plug that XP machine into the Internet, you'll get infected fairly quickly.
And I will tell you this, it happened like clicking your fingers together.
Oh, yeah. It's instantaneous. It's instantaneously.
Correct.
Yeah. But no, that's the best, like I say.
The best defense is knowing that those messages are fake and knowing that you need to run your scan.
But see, that's a problem. There's too many folks and a lot of folks that don't know about us, that don't listen to us.
And we're programmed to obey signs.
Yeah, and because I have had more, I can't tell you the number of folks that I have had call me and they said, I got your name from this person because I got this message on my machine. What do I do? And they said, the friend said, call Dave Enright, and to find out, you know, that they were being spoofed.
Yeah, you know, one of the problems with people, too, is they get a computer and they don't take the time to learn it or effort. In fact, I was talking to my sister-in-law just yesterday who's got an Apple phone, an Apple computer. It's all, everything is all synced together. She's never gone to other classes. She was given this because her son who lives in New York City thought she should have it. She knows squat about that. And she doesn't make any effort to learn it. I mean, I'll tell you something. You're gonna think I'm crazy a little bit, but I've been a diabetic for 20 years. And years ago, I had a doctor tell me this, an ears, nose, and throat doctor. Stay off the internet if you're trying to fix yourself or cure yourself.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
What he said.
Most definitely.
I either have the common cold or the plague.
What's wrong with you, go to good sites on the internet and learn all you can.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, my primary care physicians, he's as amazed as what I've learned over time. And the problem is, you know, the doctor's only got 20 minutes with you. I could go on and on about things that I brought to my doctor and say, what do you think? This is what I've learned. He will say,
okay, George,
you're absolutely right.
Yep. George, we gotta go. We gotta take a break.
I have a middle name, George.
Thanks, George. We appreciate it.
Well, keep up the good work.
Thanks, you too. We gotta take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, members of Board of Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. 44 degrees? What are you living in the past?
I don't know where that came from.
I don't know where you came from. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller. See, got an itch? I see that. Our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Victor. What's up?
Well, I've got a comment and a question. The comment is, if you could convey this to Mr. Rob Linton, I don't like the new system you've got now. When I was on hold, I heard the music in the phone and then the radio show, so I can't hear both. Before, when you're on hold, you used to hear the radio show. Now you can't do it. Victor doesn't like it.
I will tell him Victor doesn't like it. Doggone it.
And second, I just put a new keyboard on, and for some reason I kept my last three keyboards. Are they recyclable, or do I just throw them in the trash?
Are they still workable?
Well, they've got the end, Dave, not the USB. They've got the round thing. I don't remember what the name of it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The round plug that you plug in.
Yeah.
They would be recyclable, the plastics, the electronics, things like that.
So I can take it to any place that takes the computer parts.
Yeah,
and there's no problem.
You can donate them. You know, I mean,
yeah, if they were working, you can donate them to schools or churches. We'll often take things like that.
Yeah, because they're still working, and like I say, you can get the adapters to go from the PS2 to the USB.
Oh, PS2, that's what it's called. Okay.
Yep. The little round one or the big round one?
The little round one.
I'm old enough to remember the big round one.
Oh, yeah, me too. But the PS2 connector, they've got an adapter that can take it from PS2 to USB.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you guys very much.
No problem,
all right,
sir.
There you go.
Victor. I've read about a lot of people that still like the old clackety-clackety keyboards.
There's
a company still making the clackety keyboards, yeah. Now, the keyboard on my new MacBook, there's almost zero key throw. They are so tiny keys. And some of that is the carpal tunnel issue that appeared when everyone started typing. But it's taken me a little while to get used to it. And my hand position for typing, I keep nicking the escape key.
Oh, yeah.
Which is now on a touch screen, so it's not a physical button.
Right.
And so I've got to relearn typing a little bit to move my hands.
We had a guy at Kodak that was a two-finger typist.
Oh, yeah.
And I swear, he was trying to drive the keys into his desk.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because he would sit there. You could hear him down the hallway typing. It's like, you can't kill that thing. But you know, he was just so focused at hitting it. I guess he didn't realize how hard he was hitting the keys. He'd burn out. He'd ruin keyboards.
Sure. People preferred the old clacky keyboards because you had less chance of carpal tunnel because there was more pushback.
Mm-hmm. And it sounded like you were really working when your boss walked by.
I worked with a lady at Chase who couldn't type without a pen in her hand. She had learned to type. You know, working, writing things down, typing, writing things down, typing, writing things down. She worked when she typed without a pen, it was harder for her than with a pen in her hand.
Cool.
And yeah, I don't know. She worked with like the last two fingers of her. I don't know. It was very weird.
I apparently have a very hard typing style. I've had customers at work when I'm on the phone with them. You know, we type up our notes about what we're talking to the customer. And she yelled at me once for typing. Well, I will wait until you finish whatever else you're doing. I'm taking notes of our call, ma'am. So
Yeah. I used to be a 90 word a minute typist. Now I have carpal tunnel and arthritis. So I'm pretty much, I type with my elbows now, but back in the day, I was a pretty fast guy. Anyway, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm good. Going back to people that think they're getting updates out of their operating system, like Windows 7, I remember back when I had XP, and after it was out of its, useful life, it would get updates, but all they would really give you were, like, malicious software removal tool.
Which is not Windows.
Well, yeah. And they think that it's updating, you know, and maybe you would get a cumulative update here and there. That's, you know, and they'd be very spotty. And they think that it's actually getting critical updates, and it's really not. It's just limping along.
Right. Like, Microsoft did just update the malicious removal tool to take care of this whole WannaCry business.
Right.
And everybody will get that, including Windows 7 people, who will now call me and say, I just got an update, so you're a liar. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, they don't realize that it's just, they're just little things. They're not patching the holes.
Yep. That's exactly right.
And that's why they think they're still getting Windows updates, because it'll come up and say there's a Windows update and it's a malicious software tool, or it's a small cumulative update that you get every 3 months when you're like that, when you're getting them every couple weeks now on Windows 10, or twice a month.
Exactly right.
So people need to realize those aren't really the updates you need. That's just a little small little sliver of that operating limping.
Yep, you're absolutely right, Mark. Thank you.
I think that's where the confusion's coming from.
Yeah. I think you're right. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Thank you.
Have fun.
Yep, you too. Bye.
Yeah, he's right. Getting an update is not the same as getting the updates.
Well, regular updates, we should say.
Right.
They're not getting that. This is a one-time deal. You'll get it. That's it.
For a critical problem.
Yeah.
As George said earlier, he got important updates. Yeah, they're important. They're not critical.
Right.
Which is annoying that Microsoft
has this
distinction.
And that's why Microsoft put this out there so that they can get the critical update fixed for folks that are persistent in staying with Windows 7 and that they have to. Because there's some places that still have to because they've got special software, the design that will run only on Windows 7. It won't go to 10.
Right. Let's put it in perspective, people. When you say you're still getting Windows 7 updates, and Microsoft says they're not sending out Windows 7 updates anymore, who am I supposed to believe? You're getting something, but it's not a Windows 7 update.
They're misinterpreting
you. Right. You're getting an update for your antivirus. You're getting an update for this or for that. But you're not getting the Windows 7 internal operating system updates that are so critical now for maintaining a secure system on the internet.
And this all goes back to, I think, Nick, is when they sit there and see an update, they go ahead and quick, click, click, click. And as I've said in the past, people have gotten click happy. They're not taking the time to see what this update is really doing. They just assume, because it's on a Windows system, that it's a Windows update.
Yep.
It could be something else, totally, if they signed up, say, for video drivers. And they did an update. It might be coming in for that. It's updating Windows, yes, but it's not the operating system. It is just the video card or the sound card.
And because of the click happiness and program to obey signs, there are fake updates that come out. There are fake Adobe Flash updates. It's probably one of the most common fake updates, the Java fake updates. Because we're so used to installing updates, the bad guys put out fake updates. And I just happened to find fakeupdate.net. This one is fakewindowsupdate.net. It's an animated GIF of a Windows update screen with a little counter counting up really, 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 really slowly.
Nice.
So you just make this the desktop picture of your friend's computer Or go to this website on your friend's computer in full screen mode, and it looks like it's in the middle of an update. Please do not turn off your computer. And then, so it's a practical joke. Yeah. If you know what you're doing. But yeah, so the fake updates are a huge problem. And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the fake virus warnings, that you have to be really careful of fake updates. In fact, we put on our, our Mac Av website, we put up a little video to show you how fake updates can look real. But there's typically grammar errors and punctuation errors because the bad guys generally aren't native English speakers. The logos are wrong, which always strikes me as odd, because if the bad guy took another 10 seconds, he could get the right logo. That was one of the big things with the Adobe Flash updates. It had the wrong logo, and that's one of the ways I could always tell it was fake. But I didn't get it from Adobe. That's the other thing.
Right.
And so it's really hard for novice computer users, the average, millions and millions of computer users, to train them, don't click update. Make sure it's real first.
Yep. Right. All right, to the phones. Walter from Rochester, New York. Hi, Walter. What's up?
Hi there, gentlemen. I'm calling with about two Linux-related questions.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm running Ubuntu 16.04 long-term service, and I'm using... Back in time is my backup for my, for all my information. The question I have is, how can I properly put these back in time folders onto a DVD? What I do is I put the back in time onto hard drives, external hard drives, and then and store them away. Well, I wanted to go ahead and put that information on a DVD. So when I go ahead and click on to burn a data disk using XF burn, it comes along and says errors because I'm denied access. You see, I'm doing the back in time through root to cover all the users.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, then you just run your backup your burning program as root.
Pardon?
Just run your burning program as root.
Okay, I tried that, and then it does work, because that was where I was going, because I did go into my file manager and then click on that to run as root. So that'll succeed for me then, because I was afraid to try to reinstall it then on another computer to see if that data would go back.
Right. No, yeah. That should be fine.
The other issue you may find with a DVD is that they can only hold 4 gigs. So if you have a lot of files that changed, or you have large files, like movie files you've created, brought in from like your cell phone, it may not fit on a DVD.
Right. Yeah. You can get 8 gig on a double-sided.
Double layer,
I mean.
And then 16 gig if you do double-sided double layer.
Right.
But then you have to physically flip it over. Remember the olden days where you punch the notch in the floppy so you could flip it over and use the other side?
Yes, yep. Indeed.
I got another 100K.
They actually made a tool you could buy to do that.
Okay,
that's
great. We're well below that. We're just about 1.9.
Oh, there you go.
Yep.
So my second question, though, is, have you heard of Sophos free antivirus malware for Linux, S-O-P-H-O-S?
Yeah, Sophos is a well-known company.
Out of Britain.
And out of Britain, and it's a very well-known and well-respected company as well. And they do have an agent for Linux, yes.
Yes. What do you think of it? I mean, we follow what you have with Security Tango, with Clam AV and CHK, Checkroot, and et cetera. Is this like going after mice with an elephant gun?
No, Sophos is a really good program, and it's not terribly large.
Right.
It's fairly lightweight, and so... it should be fine. It's up to version 9 something.
Right.
And it's free.
Yep.
As long as you meet the system requirements, which are not terribly big.
Right.
You should be fine with that. It's a nice program that works great. So, yeah, Sophos is a well-known and well-respected company, so it should be fine.
Yeah. From what I can see, you just have to have some familiarity with command line to configure it. I've done that with many times, so it shouldn't be a big issue then.
No, it really shouldn't.
Okay, well, great. Thank you very much for all the information.
There you go. Thank you. Yeah,
and we like recommending sometimes the smaller, less known AV companies, because the bad guys, when they do write a virus, they know about Norton, McAfee, the big companies, and so they won't release it until it can get past Norton,
right?
And which then Norton takes a few days to find it and update their definitions, and then we're back to that exploit window where the people don't install the updates,
right? And again, the Sophos antivirus for Linux is free, and it works pretty nicely. I haven't put it on my main machine yet, so I don't know. But it seems to be a good performer with low impact.
I've used the Mac version quite a bit.
Yeah,
and that's the big thing: very low impact on your performance of your machine. The most annoying part I get are the warnings. This email has this virus in it. This email has this virus in it. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I don't want to turn the warnings off just in case.
Yeah, right.
But every time I download my mail, I get another virus warning.
Of course you do. Yep. We all do.
We all do, yeah. And if you don't get a virus warning, then your virus antivirus program isn't working right.
Yep. I have multiple emails. The one from RIT scans.
Yep.
And sends me a note that says, here's a bunch of things we think are viruses. If they're not, unblock them. So far, they've been completely correct about everything, so I don't worry about that. All right, that music tells me you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but you get another chance to do it again, because we are not done. We will be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with all of you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and for whatever reason is lurking in your dim, dark, depressing past, you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to be member-supported by you, Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Soundbites. Nick and Steve stepped out of the office just for a second, but as I speak, here comes Nick to join us to the longest-running computer show in the known world. You are listening definitely to Soundbites right here at jazz90.1.org.
And sorry.
Oh, no, that's quite all right.
That wasn't 90 seconds just then.
It includes the music. The great tones to get us back into the
mellifluousity.
Yes.
Of Dave Enright.
I don't know about that.
I don't know about that either, but there you are. We are back, hurtling headlong into the second hour of the show. Oh, I have a couple of announcements. This Thursday is Rochester Googles. We meet at St. John's. Every first Thursday of the month, if you're interested in Google, we talk about whatever comes up for all things Google, and it's a lot of fun. Also, this Wednesday evening, I'm giving an online, I don't know what to call it, class?
Seminar?
Session seminar on...
Feed?
Feed.
Yeah.
Online feed for on ransomware. It's a for pay thing, but if you're interested, it's at mastermindlounge.com, and that'll be this Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock online. We'll talk about ransomware and how to protect yourself and what to do. So back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from, where are you from, Bob?
Penfield, New York.
Penfield, New York.
Yeah, I couldn't quite get it because I was picking you up. Louder and
yeah.
I did a bad job of calling in.
Well, yeah, you did, Bob.
How are you, Nick?
I'm peachy. How are you?
I'm great, thanks to you.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
And life, you know, what can I say?
Exactly.
So I have a question. I've been listening to the show, and I'm wondering, are they still giving security updates for Windows 7?
We're going to hang up on you now, Bob. Thanks for calling.
Sorry.
We can hit
the
dump button.
Yeah.
I can hit the dump button so that never goes over the air.
I wouldn't blame you, frankly. But anyway, Nick, I want to say thanks for all your help.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's always my pleasure. Bob does his own radio show on an entirely different station. I don't get up at that early in the morning, Bob.
That which cannot be mentioned?
Not on. You can mention it. It's WHAM. He does. This is Bob, the world famous Robert Brenna Esquire. He does the Brenna and Boyce Law Forum on WHAM every Sunday morning. What, 8 to 9.
I've been still up at 8.
Yeah.
Yes.
not recently, though.
Especially after the Camp Good Days fundraisers.
Yep, exactly. But I don't generally, 8 o'clock in the morning is not my time.
I understand, Nick, but you're so gracious with your time when we work together that I can't hold anything against you, and I can have nothing but gratitude.
Well, thank you, my friend. Thank you very much.
How long have we been friends?
Friends. Well, friends, probably 11 minutes.
I'm back in your good graces?
For a moment, yeah.
your show is great. You guys do a great service.
Thank you.
And how much more am I supposed to save for the $10?
No, you're good. It'll be checks in the mail. Just sit by the mailbox and wait for it.
All right, buddy.
All right. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bob Brenna, great guy. Great guy. And I know this is oxymoronic. Great lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
and a great person. So, yeah. And they do a show themselves, and he's a good guy. But as I was saying before, he rudely interrupted me. If you're interested in ransomware, Mastermind Lounge Wednesday night, if you sign up ahead of time, we'll be doing it. It'll be fun.
Wish I could, but that's past my bedtime.
No, I get it. 7 right o'clock now. At night, you're old. You go to bed early.
Well, when you got to get up at 4:30 in the morning,
yeah,
you know, it's a different tone.
Yeah, I'll call you before I go to bed. Make sure you're up. We've been through that already.
Yep.
You didn't want
Don't
me to call.
Don't even go there.
You did not want me to call. You're not. I'm not. I'm taking zero blame for that one. I told you I would call you. All right. Here's for all of you smug Linux listeners. On Wednesday, maintainers of the Samba network utility patched a critical code execution vulnerability that could pose a severe threat to users until the fix is widely installed. The 7-year-old flaw. Does this sound familiar?
Isn't
a 7-year-old flaw in an SMB system message block.
Is it the same underlying problem as Microsoft? Yeah.
Yep. It's been indexed as CVE 2017-7494. Can be reliably exploited with just one line of code, as long as a few conditions are met. Those requirements include vulnerable computers that A, make file and print sharing port 445 reachable on the internet, B, configure shared files to have write privileges, and C, use known or guessable service paths for those files. Now, you may say to yourself, who the hell does that? Well, a lot of CMS, content management systems, do that. And content management systems are things like WordPress and Joomla and Drupal and Moodle and all of those. You can configure them to not do that, but a lot of them come configured that way out of the box. So pay attention. The other thing is they have to use knowable or guessable server paths for those files. And, of course, if you use the standard installation, they will have those. So when those conditions are satisfied, remote attackers can upload any code of their choosing and cause the server to execute it, possibly with unfettered root privileges, depending on the vulnerable platform. All versions of Samba from 3.5 onwards are vulnerable to remote code execution vulnerability, allowing a malicious client to upload a shared library to a writable share and then cause the server to load and execute it. Samba maintainers wrote in an advisory published Wednesday. They urged anyone using a vulnerable version to install a patch as soon as possible. It isn't WannaCry, but it's very, very, very close. The vulnerability description led researchers to speculate exploits could be wormable. That means they could self-replicate from vulnerable machine to vulnerable machine quickly and without requiring end users to do anything to trigger the spread. Samba eventually provided the means for Unix and Linux machines to interoperate with a variety of Windows networking features, including Active Directory and Windows Server Domain. The vulnerability almost immediately drew comparisons to the Windows flaw that the WannaCry ransomware worm exploited earlier this month to infect more than 200,000 computers and 150 companies. That flaw, too, was more than 5 years old, resided in a widely used implementation of the server message block protocol for printer and file sharing, and allowed for highly reliable code execution exploits that required no interaction on the part of the end user. So pretty much same, same. When the Windows vulnerability was first disclosed in April, many security experts assumed it would be hard to exploit because few computers would expose the file and print sharing capabilities on the Internet. Well, we know that's not true. Apparently, more than 477,000 Samba-enabled computers exposed port 445, although it isn't clear how many of them are running a vulnerable version of the utility. Given the ease and interoperability and reliability of exploits, this hole is worth plugging as soon as possible. It's likely only a matter of time until attackers begin actively targeting it. Luckily, the Linux folks have already released the patch, so if you're current on your updates, you're safe. So are you using Linux? Are you updating regularly? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
And it may have been some of these open ports are on printers because printers use SMB for Windows printer sharing. So no one ever thinks of updating the software in their printer, and many companies don't release software updates for the inside of the printer. You may get a driver update for your computer, but rarely do you get firmware updates for your printer. So that printer could be sitting on the network, and this WannaCry and this Linux issue are network aware. So as soon as one device on the network gets infected, all of the devices on the network can get infected.
Or if you're running NAS, a network attached storage device.
That's probably SMB.
Yep. That almost is the definition of an SMB system with a port 445 open.
I still use IPX.
Of course you do.
I've got my NetWare server running.
Right.
Oh, boy.
Don't laugh. You're secure.
Yeah.
We may think, well, that's crap, but nope, it's secure.
It's still secure.
I'll guarantee you there are very few exploits out there for NetWare. I will guarantee you that.
You might be able to count it on
one thumb.
I was going to say two fingers.
Yeah, right. All right, we're back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hey, Nick. Happy holiday weekend to all of three of you.
You too?
I do have a question, but an observation first. A gentleman earlier was talking about how the tone of things has changed over the years. We pick on Microsoft because we can, because they present such a large target.
Well, there's that.
It's fun picking on Billy and the boys.
Right. It's not Billy anymore, actually, but yes.
And, but he's still the name that's associated. And if it weren't for their ineptitude, planned or otherwise, there'd be tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of people who didn't have gainful employment.
Yeah.
And they didn't even work for Microsoft.
I have always said if it were not for Bill Gates and Microsoft, I would still be an unemployed actor.
I have said
that for 40 years. So, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, we often say in our company, we sell Macs, but we make a lot of money fixing PCs.
Yeah.
and that's how I started my business, was repairing PCs and upgrading those and working off the Windows system. So, yeah, even my whole career, the years that I've been doing PCs is all off the Windows.
Yep.
Yeah, intentional or not, they've created an entire industry.
Oh, yes, they have.
Now, my question. I'm going to switch over to phones here for a minute. I have an Android phone, and I've been getting messages lately from the friendly folks at Facebook, and they want to take over running SMS messages on my phone for me.
Yeah.
What is an SMS message?
Short message service. It's
every text message you ever sent.
Yeah, it's text messaging. And they want to run it because, as Mark Zuckerberg has said well more than once, there is no longer any privacy on the internet, and they both take and archive everything you do. So all the stuff you put on Facebook, now all this Messenger stuff that you send, now they want to do that with your text messages, so that they have all of that on hand.
The next level up is MMS, or multimedia messaging, and that's if you send an audio or video or picture. But in general, you know, anytime you send a text message, you are using the SMS protocol.
Okay. So if I tell it no, then my text messages stay my text messages, and...
Well, theoretically, yes. I mean, they're still going through Verizon or whoever your carrier is. So.
Yeah, okay, but it's not being posted out on Facebook for
right. It's not on Facebook.
So Facebook wants you to use Messenger as your one messaging service for text messages, for Facebook messages, for every messaging service you use. They want Facebook to be it.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, for Apple users, in the messaging app, your blue messages are using Apple's Messenger service that goes through Apple, and the green ones are the SMS messages that go through the cellular service. And so there's sort of a running joke in the Apple world is that people hate green messages because it's probably an Android phone at the other end. But it also means that it goes through the cell system and counts on your text plan. And most plans are now unlimited texting. But the blue messages go through the internet and don't count on your cell plan.
I see.
Right. And on the Android end, there's a program called Allo. It's very much the same thing. It works. You can do stickers and doodles and emojis as well as text. It also has Google Assistant as part of its thing, but it does also go through the
internet
wireless
rather than
right goes
cellular.
To the internet. Right.
And one of the things that was sort of interesting in the early days, text messages were kind of an afterthought. That it was unused carrier space on the cell signal. And somebody figured out that they could use that to send messages, and then the company decided, "Oh, we can charge people for that." And that's those were the early days of 25 cents per text message.
Yeah, and now they've gone to the point where they know data is what's making their money, so now they give you unlimited calling and unlimited text, just because
unlimited phone, unlimited text, and $10 a gig or more for data.
Yeah. Right.
Well, it's just it's finding the most profitable thing they can hose you for.
So in that case, if you are paying a data plan, when you send messages through the internet, it's charged against your data. So when you'd want to send it through SMS, so it's not charged against your data.
Right.
Well,
all right.
You guys have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Andy. We're going to take another quick break back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. How exciting is that?
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun! I should probably read another piece of news.
We got a phone call.
Do we?
Yeah, Scott from Buffalo.
Oh, that's right, we do. And I even wrote it down. Sorry about that, Scott. Apparently, I'm just getting old. You have to forgive me. Welcome, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Clearly better than I am.
I just noticed. In Safari, which I'm using instead of Chrome, normally using Safari, I noticed that my toolbar had disappeared. And when I go to View, there's the thing that says always show toolbar in full screen. It's grayed out.
That only shows up when you're in full screen. For the toolbar, when you're not in full screen, there's a few commands down from that is, where is it? Favorites bar. No, there's favorites bar, toolbar. There's a whole bunch of different ones there. I'm in Safari right now. Customized toolbar, so you can choose which buttons are in the toolbar. You may need to go into Customize and drag the actual toolbar back. What probably happened is an add window opened that didn't have a toolbar, because that's something the code can set at the other end. And it remembered that. So Safari's trying to be handy and convenient and remembering things. So it remembered there was no toolbar on that window, so it left the toolbar off.
Okay. So it's nothing awful is what I thought had happened.
Yeah. Yes, it's just hiding. So, yeah, when you go into full screen mode, normally it hides the toolbar so that you're in full screen mode and you see just the screen you're on. So by having that always show toolbar in full screen mode, then you can see the toolbar. One of the things that we've ran into is a couple of system versions ago, Apple changed the behavior of the green zoom button. It no longer just zooms the window to fit the screen. It zooms it into full screen mode. And in full screen mode, it hides your menu bar, it hides your dock, it hides everything except the screen you're in, which can be handy if you know you want to do that. But for most people, it's very confusing because then you can't find where your buttons went and your tools. And so if you move your cursor back up to the top of the screen where the toolbar would be, then it does show it to you, and you can click the green button to get out of full screen mode again.
Now, I'm in full screen mode now, and no toolbar is showing up. And there's no. When I look on the internet, they show some button on the window, which doesn't seem to exist in mine.
Wait
a second. What is this?
You're not getting the red and green buttons in the toolbar.
No, all I'm getting is at the right hand side a down arrow, a box with an up arrow, and something that looks like folders.
That may be the button that takes you out of full screen mode. You may be. Do you remember which OS you're running?
Let's see.
You may be behind.
10.12.5.
Yeah, 10.12. You should see the green buttons when you move your cursor back up to the very top of the screen, so you can bring the toolbar back down again.
Right. Well, it's not.
We used to see this.
Didn't show up.
Yeah, we used to see this Microsoft Word where you'd accidentally hit the key that put you to full screen mode.
Ooh, now, when I go to the highest part of the window, you know, I see Safari File Edit View History Bookmark.
Right, yeah, so the menu bar comes back out again, yeah.
And now there's a green light on the left-hand side of the screen?
Yeah, that will take you out of full screen mode and back into windowed mode.
But now I still don't have my toolbar. Well, I guess I'll have to drag them in again.
Yeah, go into the Customize Toolbar command, which lets you change what tools are in the bar, and you can drag the default toolbar back into your menu bar.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep.
All right. Bye-bye.
I always like putting the zoom buttons and the print button in my toolbar, so it saves a couple of steps when you want to print a page. You don't have to go to the menu. You can just click the button.
Right.
Although that was also an issue in Word. If you turn on all of the toolbars, there's no space left to actually type. same thing on the web browser. If you end up turning all your toolbars and buttons on, you may not have much screen left to actually see the page you're on.
Well, some folks, you know, they download so much other stuff that adds stuff to their toolbar. I can remember one time a computer I had to clean up had 14 other toolbars on it. And they were wondering why they couldn't get at stuff. It used to be that I could see everything on one screen.
Yep.
I go, yeah, you got all these toolbars. I didn't do that. Yeah, you did.
And they didn't notice they were there. So it's kind of the same.
Yeah, you go in there and remove all those, and all of a sudden they had their screen back.
Well, a lot of times when you download and install software,
it wants to be on the toolbar.
There's a checkbox. Install this toolbar also.
Right.
So read the messages.
Most people just don't uncheck it.
Again, getting click happy.
Yep. I do want to remind people, talking to Scott reminds me that tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Linden Time, we will be in Second Life if anybody wants to join us. Search for me, Neil Infinity, N-I-H-I-L, Infinity, and ask for a teleport and I'll bring you in.
Very good.
And we'll have some fun.
Still getting a good-sized crowd there?
We get the same bunch of people every time, and it's very nice, actually. We answer computer questions, and we chit-chat about stuff, and it's very, very pleasant, actually.
Hmm.
Well, that's interesting.
And again, it's here's, after here, your bedtime again.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's after your bedtime. All right. You'll be delighted to know this, Dave. The Samsung Chromebook Pro is finally going to be a real device.
Ooh.
Lost in the hubbub of Google I.O. on Friday, Samsung quietly dropped a press release pegging the device for a May 28th release date. With the Chromebook Pixel off the market, the all-aluminum, touch- and pen-enabled Android app-packing Samsung Chromebook models were immediately looked to as the flagships of the Chromebook universe. Samsung announced the ARM-powered Chromebook Plus and the Intel-powered Chromebook Pro at CES in January, and the Plus saw a reasonable release date in the next month, February. Release units for the faster Intel-powered Chromebook Pro went out in February, too. Review units did, but the actual release date remained a mystery. Now it's May, almost 5 months after the announcement. The Chromebook Pro will finally hit the streets. The reason for the delay, of course, we talked about this, I think, last week, is the Android apps on Chrome OS feature. It has been around as a beta for some time, but wrapping things up apparently took much longer than Google expected. According to a report from The Verge, the Android on Chrome OS beta will continue into the summer, and while the Chromebook Pro's Android container will be running Android 7.0, it still won't support Windows resizing at launch. The Plus made it to market because the ARM-based device better matches what typical Android hardware looks like. A tiny handful of Intel-based Android phones is released every year, but apparently Chrome OS makes things a little more complicated. The Intel Chromebook actually has worse Android performance than the ARM one, despite packing a faster processor. With more time to cook, hopefully the bugs have been worked out. The Chromebook Pro will be available for purchase at Best Buy, Amazon, Samsung, and of course through the Shop Samsung app. And it'll cost $550. But remember, that includes a touch screen.
Mm-hmm.
And the pen. So if you've been waiting for a Chromebook Pro, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
No, I'm still waiting to get my Android apps on it.
Well, and that's you already have one that will do that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
The problem, we talked about this, I think, last week, was that they have exactly the same problem Apple did when they first brought out the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
The iPhone apps ran on it, but they looked ugly.
Yeah.
So they had to window them to make them look good, or you could double size them, which made them pixelated but still
readable.
Okay. But. And so Google's having exactly the same problem with Android apps on Chrome as Apple had with iOS apps on the iPad. And I would suggest that the same solution, window them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but whatever.
Yeah, no, I'm patiently waiting.
I've written a couple of websites that were for the phone, for a non-screen device.
Mm-hmm.
And it's painful.
Challenging?
It's challenging because you don't know if people are looking at it in portrait mode or in landscape mm-hmm. mode or how big their screen actually is or what the resolution is so that you can get the optimum font.
You end up making 10 different apps because it has to look right on every possible phone size and orientation.
Yep, mm-hmm. And there are things, people have done things with HTML5 and with a bunch of stuff, and now the new Google Go and Google, the new thing, Kylin, whatever it's called. And they're all working toward doing this, but it is not easy because there are so many options. That's an open marketplace. That's the way that works. And so people are having trouble getting it to work. And I would rather Google brings it out when it's right.
Yeah, do it right.
Rather than just, the day it's there and then people
complain. We want it right, not right now.
That's right.
Although we want it right and right now.
Yes, we do. We want it right now, but we'll take it when it's right. It's an issue that a lot of companies have. Like I said, Apple had it as well. We're starting to see that it's coming out soon. We'll see what happens.
And I hate apps that don't rotate on my iPad because I normally have it in landscape mode because that's how my stand works.
Yeah, and the auto rotate.
And my M&T Bank app won't rotate. Very frustrating.
So it looks sideways?
Yeah. Then I have to rotate my screen, which is annoying because now the angle's wrong.
Exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Pat from Batavia, New York. What's up, Pat?
Well, I just had a thought, and before I proceed, I thought I would get a second opinion on it because sometimes you have crazy thoughts, you know. I have an Android phone, and it seems like lately I'm full. I've got probably too many apps on here and too many different data clean services. And I had a thought, what if I was just to do a factory reset? Would I still keep my contacts? Because, you know, I'm almost at the point where I'm ready to start over. You know,
well, like Pat, it depends.
People say it's time for a change in life. And what?
Yeah, it depends.
Okay.
If you are using the Google app for your contacts, then Google saves them basically in Google Drive.
Okay.
So if you were to get a new phone or reset that phone to factory, as long as you use the same Google sign-in that you're using now, you would get back your contacts, yes.
So I would just have to verify where my contacts are saved.
Yeah, but if you're using, make sure you're using the Google, the Android app, the one from Google. It's called Messages. For contacts, it would be looks like a person silhouette.
And who's your cell phone carrier?
Verizon.
Yeah, you got to be careful. Well, if you're using the Verizon app, that can also sync to Verizon, but you have to make sure that's turned on.
Well, I would probably just rather than trust my own reading of this, check with Verizon and see what they show me doing.
Right.
And if I did that, I could just assume the first part's good. And I verified it. Then if I go to the factory reset, then it'll just take me back to the apps that Verizon wants me to have.
Well, no.
No?
Here's the other thing. Google is very helpful. And this next feature is really designed for a new phone. If you sign in with the same username and password you had before, Google will make its best attempt to recreate your old phone on your new phone. So not only do you get your contacts back and all of that stuff, but you also get all your apps back.
Okay, part of my problem, I think, is I've been putting too many apps on. I didn't go for a big phone. It's probably 16 gigabytes.
Right.
And five goes up with apps, or, you know, just the operating system. So now I'm down to 11.
Right. So what I would suggest you do before you do anything else is just remove those apps, uninstall them.
Well, I guess I was looking for the lazy. Nobody wants the hardware. So.
No, I understand that. But unfortunately, the way Google opted into lazy is to make it easy to set up a new phone or reset up your old phone exactly like it was. So
in other words, like when my wife says, I'm gonna throw this trash out, and I go through the trash and pull it back out and say, no, I think I better keep this.
Yeah, right.
Well, and you can use this as a opportunity to clean out your contacts of all the people you really don't want to contact anymore and just start fresh.
Right.
And then maybe I'll start running a mile a day and not eating more fried foods and give up drinking beer and all the other stuff, right?
Exactly. That's how it all works. But in this particular case,
you've kind of dissuaded me of my simple way out. But
sorry.
As often is the case, the easy way just really doesn't go where you want it to.
No, it does not. Sorry. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Richard from Irondequoit on the line. What's up, Richard?
Hi. A bit of advice for the previous caller and then a question.
Sure.
I have Verizon as well, and when I wanted to reset my phone, I called Verizon customer service, or perhaps he can do it himself, send all his contacts to their cloud, and then restore his phone and then retrieve them. How's that for advice? Yep.
That works as well. And as we said, if you're using Verizon, that works. If you're using Google, rather, that works as well. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. And now, number two, the subject of passwords is totally driving me nuts. I bought LastPass, and I'm still not happy with how it does not fill in my passwords, and I think I am doing something wrong. When I turn on my cell phone or my desktop, must I always log in to LastPass with my master password and then go from there and it will fill everything in? In other words, how can I have my devices automatically know my LastPass master password?
You don't want them to, because then anyone who has your device could get to all of your passwords.
Well, what if I don't care about that?
Then don't use LastPass.
Yeah,
and make all your
passwords.
I don't
want
to have to remember all my passwords, but do I have to turn on and log into LastPass initially when I am using a device?
My first guess is yes. That's part of the security.
You need. All right. Okay. So first, for what operating system are you on?
Windows 7 on the desktop.
Okay. So what's happening here is that it doesn't. It's either not saving or it's not autofilling. One or the other.
Okay.
So if you're using Chrome or Firefox or Internet Explorer, your LastPass icon should be red.
Oh.
In Safari, the icon will turn black instead of red.
So red means it's active and it will fill in, presumably.
Right. And under your preferences, you go to LastPass. So in the LastPass icon, click on that. Click Preferences. Click General. And make sure that automatically fill login information is enabled.
General, and then login information enabled.
Automatically fill login information.
I see. Okay.
Now, the other thing is, if the site you're going to is based on Flash or Silverlight, LastPass doesn't support that.
Okay. And when I turn on my cell phone initially, I have LastPass in there as well.
Yeah.
Must I initially log into LastPass and forevermore during that session, it will fill in passwords?
I believe that is true, yes.
Okay.
There may be a way to set it. I say there may be a way to set it to use your fingerprint reader on your phone rather than typing the password. I don't know. I don't use LastPass, so I'm not sure if that's in there. But that that's how the iPhone works as well.
Yes, my phone will do that. Well, thank you very much.
Yep, Burr, good luck. Yeah. Also, there's a choice somewhere in there about save all entered data. So if you're having some issues, make sure you do that before you do any screwing around.
Yep. Although there is an interesting autofill exploit, a maliciously crafted website. You know how often we start with that.
Yeah, right.
That wants your name and address, they can put, say, your credit card number field off the screen so you don't see it. And so normally, you hit autofill, and it fills in your credit card number if you're on a page where you're buying something. Well, the malicious website, by putting the credit card number off screen, you don't see that you're filling in your credit card number.
Nice.
And now that malicious website has your credit card number.
Nice. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Joe from Cheek.
Cheek, New York.
There we go. What's up?
Well, for all those doubters out there that don't believe you, don't believe Steve, don't believe Dave, tell you what, let's not give the people fish. Let's teach them how to fish.
Okay.
You just, put into Google, end of life, Windows 7.
Yeah.
And the results that come up are probably going to be in the Microsoft .com domain. That's the key. You don't want to go to some site that's going to tell you something different. You want to make sure the domain ends in Microsoft.com. What I found, it's at support.microsoft.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find out what policies that Microsoft has for end-of-life of products, what mainstream support is, what extended support is, what products mainstream and extended support applies to, and the dates for all those for all their products. Like I'm looking at the one page here. They have Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 10.
Right.
And you can decide for yourself. It's much better that you know, don't believe me. Don't believe Nick. Believe what's on the web page in front of your eyes.
Right. And if you follow the right links in there, it will also tell you exactly, well, down at the bottom of the page, what's the difference between mainstream and extended support?
Absolutely. And the one, you probably saw the Google Plus post I made, but a lot of the trouble with this WannaCry malware is that these medical devices, like the National Health Service was using is in England.
Yep.
Every time they make an update to one of those things, let's face it, people's lives are at stake. You don't want some side effect to happen to, I don't know, make an MRI machine go haywire.
Right.
So every single update has to go through expensive and, unfortunately, expensive testing. To make sure
and
time that these
consuming.
Updates do not do something untoward to the patients that use them.
Yep.
That's what really made it so terrible, is it takes such a long time. It has to be tested over and over. Well, what happens if we take the MRI this way? What about these patients that require this other way? It's the company I used to work for, we pushed out Microsoft updates. They needed to be done within, like, 3 days. So it's like by the Friday that they were, or by the Tuesday that were released, by Friday we had to have them done.
Right.
So they were pretty much rushed through. We did a lot of testing, but we didn't do nearly as much coverage that would be required for medical devices.
Right, and that's the problem. One of the issues that Microsoft had in the beginning when they started going into enterprises was the tech support people, system administrators like me, hated that machines were randomly updating on their own without our input.
Soft is a really godsend for people like you and me.
Right. So when Microsoft instituted the ability to download, to handle that on your own, so we could download it, test the living heck out of it, and then finally push it out to everybody.
And the first part was when they condensed it to 1 day a month, then everyone updated that 1 day a month, and your internet was god slow because so many people were downloading giant updates.
Right, and the beauty there is we could, with the right software from Microsoft, which they finally released, we could download it to our internal network.
Yep.
And serve it from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe.
Yeah, any enterprises that are, you know, large enough and worth their salt, they will have a test environment, a development environment, and a production environment. Some even have a staging environment where you do final testing on that before you push it to production. But, yeah, test. You don't want mistakes going out, especially if you're something like a bank.
Right.
People get really torqued off if you mishandle their money.
Right, and you're right. With hospitals, it's even worse. And the other part of the problem is there are so many different machines in hospitals that are using Windows XP. You have to, or 7, you have to test each one thoroughly. People's lives are on the line. I get it. I do. But those places are paying for updates, too. If they're still on Windows 7 or even XP, God forbid, they should be paying for the updates so Microsoft will continue to support them.
I used to love it where I worked because the extent of what I needed to test for all these Microsoft updates was a computer telephony integration server, a CTI server, and my own workstation. Everything else ran on SCO Unix. It ran on Unixware, Linux. You know, yep. It was all pretty much painless for those systems, but, you know, I'm also glad to hear that they're pretty much going to a continuous update model, that it won't be, you know, second Tuesday of the month. It'll be rolling updates. Like, there's a lot of Linux distributions that do the same thing. You don't get, like let's take, for example, April for Ubuntu. That's when they do their major updates, or major releases, I should say, and October.
Right. But updates are constant.
Well, these rolling releases, as they call them, when you download an installation medium, it has all the updates up that day you download it rolled into that installation media.
Right.
Those are absolutely wonderful. And most of the Linux distributions, they've been doing continuous updates, too. They only wait for some extensive testing, and you could get them any day of the week, day, night, morning, doesn't matter.
Yep. And many people like me download them in the background but look at them before they install them.
Oh, yeah, I always want to know what's changing. Well, thank you for your time, gentlemen. I hear the background music.
Thank you, Joe. We'll see you. Keep smiling. But Joe is absolutely right. That music tells me you wasted two more hours of your life. There, you'll never get them back, but that's okay. You didn't need them anyway. So we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. Steve Ray has something you
want. Yeah, I want to say we got the podcast feed back up and running. We had to update some software on the back end. So last week's show is up. This week's show might be a while because I'm going to go fly my rocket now.
Good for you.
New York Power, Geneseo. Come on down this weekend and see rockets fly. No charge for spectators. Have
right.
Fun.
And I will see, I'm sure, some of you, I hope, on Wednesday night in the Mastermind Lounge thing. We'll see you Thursday at Rochester Google's. We'll see you tomorrow in Second Life. And we'll see you next Saturday on the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.